Oh my God. Nothing needs to go that hard.
You're listening to Season 6 of MGIF, a video game-leaning podcast where you listen to me walking around mostly London, having fun, silly chats with people who are involved with or have an interest in video games in one way or another. If, while you're listening to this podcast, you begin to think about video game culture and its wider place in society, that is not my fault. Episode 1 of Season 6 is with the incomparable Johnny Chiodini. Johnny is a wonderfully talented games media legend and has made things for GameSpot, Eurogamer, ITN and Channel 4. Once a key figure over at Eurogamer, Johnny decided to fly the nest and go freelance, bringing their exceptional video producing and presenting skills to Patreon. These days, Johnny creates a bunch of amazing stuff on the Johnny Chiodini YouTube channel, as well as being involved in running D&D for Oxventure. This podcast was recorded in September of 2023, where I met up with Johnny and we grabbed a coffee. I went for a nice walk around a very, very lovely little wood before finding a place to sit down, plug in the big boy mics, and look at a lovely lake while we talked about all sorts of shite. And the tangents we went on, we talked about D&D, Baldur's Gate 3, Dark Souls, streaming, what it's like to get a Patreon running of your own with a dedicated fan base. We talked about staying up till 2 in the morning as people in their 40s and listening to old new metal and remembering things. Johnny is a wonderful person and I just absolutely love hanging out with them. This was an absolute riot. I'm sure you'll enjoy it as much as I enjoyed doing it. Please enjoy the delightful sounds of Transport for London as I make my way to meet the delightful Johnny Chiodini.
I know. How are you?
All right, thanks.
Good. Good.
You wanted to wet your whistle before we go on a yacht?
Yes.
Well, we'll go that way and then we'll come back.
Ooh.
Because there are cafes bloody that hell. Way, but this one's a good one.
I would get lost instantly. It's quite worrying if you didn't have Google Maps or any other map application.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
So bad.
How long do you reckon before you can ping a...
So that was just some sort of bridge water just fell on me.
Oh no! Yeah,
just because you're like, oh, what nutrients are in that?
Oh, none of the good ones.
Yeah, all the bad ones. Sorry. Yes. How long would we last without?
No, I was going to say, how long is it going to be until you can you ping a GPS path? I guess that's just Google Maps, and you tell
you've
it to go,
thing.
Isn't it?
You've got a thing. It's like an advert for Google bloody maps now. You know they've got a thing. Well, my phone's got it anyway. I don't know about you. You can you can fucking AR it. So you point it at the, you do a live camera on your phone, the dots go on the road.
Bloody
in front
hell!
Of you.
That's genuinely quite impressive.
Yeah, it's cool. And also, if you're meeting someone, appear on the map like fucking GTA. Their little icon.
Oh, that's amazing.
It's actually kind of sick. But
I started replaying Red Dead Redemption 2 last night because I lost my save file after 95 hours.
Oh, my God.
But it means that my brain now is just like...
Did you not finish? So you didn't finish it?
Oh, no, I never finished it.
That is... I feel a bit sick.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Because I love that game, but my major complaint is I'm pretty sure I've already complained on this podcast about it, is that it is so unnecessarily long.
Oh, no respect for the player's time whatsoever. 3 epilogues, is it?
Yeah.
Well, no one needs that many epilogues.
It's when you say, it's like, I've been going for so long anyway, and you get to that bit, and it just goes, epilogue, part one, and you go,
one!
But... the epilogue is really good, and I'm quite glad it's quite long, because it's really good shit, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I'm just like... there's a bit, spoilers.
Alright.
Cuba.
Oh, what?
Leave it out.
Why? Yeah.
Where are we going somewhere else? It's like a spin off thing. It's like jumping. It's like.
It's kind of like the Mexican Civil War thing. That's right,
hello, yeah. Oh, can I have it? We're going to take it with us.
Take your
Thank you.
Can I get a filter, please?
Filter?
Yeah.
Thank you.
I will.
Thank you too.
There we go.
Theory. Yeah.
Lost City Adventure Golf in Nottingham. Genuinely brilliant.
Yeah.
Aztec themed, and it's another one of those get pissed while you do it thing.
Yeah.
So if you want, you can scan a QR code and tell them what hole you're on, and they'll like bring you a Bacardi Breezer or a different better drink. But at the end of that...
seems right for the golfer, the mini-golf.
Yeah. So I went on a stag do, and we'd done a package where we were like, you know, it was like £10, and you get a drink and you get a thing, like a round of golf.
Drink and a thing?
What were we drinking? It was something weird. I don't know.
Right.
I was kind of in that, am I hungover or am I drunk bug of a stag? But anyway, to the point, it had one of those... hit the ball in the thing, give us the ball back.
Yeah.
And if you hit it in the middle, you won a free round of golf.
Right.
And the form of that round of golf is it was a coin. It was an Inca gold coin. And I managed it, and my friend also managed it, and we went up, and there was no RFID. It's not that fancy.
Yeah.
But it means it's more reliable, because we went up and we were like, we will have 2 pieces of Inca gold,
nice.
Please. And they just forked them over. I don't know if they actually keep track.
So what would this? What would you do with this? Just is it just a display?
No, it gives you a free round of golf the next time you go.
Oh, so it's currency.
Yeah, I've lost mine.
Oh, shit.
But I'm absolutely going back. Because I very much enjoy going to Nottingham.
Yes.
Because, number one, Warhammer.
Yeah.
This is where Warhammer World is. And number two... Log, John Blythe.
I was going to say he's number two, Log, John Blythe.
Yeah, it is.
Previous guest on the show.
Oh, wonderful. Did you go to King Billy?
We did. I was going to go, but he was coming down to London. Anyway, so I said, I'll meet you. We met
he does
in the station central. Was it Kingsway or King's Cross? Rap from Marks and Spencer's. Audio, me choosing a rap. And then we sang to Nina Simone because someone was singing Feeling Good on the...
Do you want to stop and have a little sing-along?
Yeah.
You know how I feel.
Nearly. Oh, she's doing it where you do it dead slow. And then we went to Loading Bar.
Loading Bar.
Sat there to do our little sit-down bit.
Very nice.
Yeah.
It's not so bad.
Yeah, it was nice. But yes, that is genuinely reasons to visit Nottingham.
Yeah. Lock. Well, number three is Lost City Adventure Golf.
Indeed.
I would avoid the Haunted Museum.
Museum.
It's, you know, it's a museum, and it's meant to be all kitsch and like, ooh, look at all these spooky artifacts we've got. And they've got a giant Slimer from Ghostbusters in the window. And we all went in again on this stag do.
Yeah.
And then on the wall, there was just a framed, kind of like a box frame, with a chunk of Auschwitz in it.
Oh.
And a picture of Auschwitz and a swastika ring. Next to like a supposedly haunted piano. And it's like, that's like, this is just mawkish. Like,
that's really weird.
That's not haunted. That's just a place where war crimes happen.
It's just fucked up. It's a museum of fucked up.
Yeah, so I left and I...
Really weird.
I had a go at the lady at the counter and she was, very dismissive. She was like, well, it's history. I was like, yeah.
Well,
yes,
it's history.
But context is important because ghosts aren't real, so...
Yeah, yeah.
But
what
yeah.
are you doing? Are you doing a historically accurate museum or a weird, like, fun...
Yeah. So I wouldn't
that
recommend that. But I stormed out while I was waiting for my friends to also clock on to the fact it was shit and leave.
Yeah.
I wrote them a 1-star review on Google, which, as far as I'm aware, they've hidden. So really, it all amounted to nothing.
Wow. But that's just odd.
Yeah.
Because what I think, what else is spook? What else is haunted? The Nazis.
Yeah, it's like. Yeah.
What is it? What are they even? What's the vibe?
I don't know. There was a chunk of Chernobyl as well.
Wow.
And that, like, that's a weird one. Because it was, they had a photo
of...
Yeah, they just did. they had a photo of the elephant's foot.
Yeah.
And they were like, you know, Chernobyl, that was bad. No one died in that disaster. Obviously, there were knock-on effects, but yeah. It's like, it's... I can tell you.
Maybe you think
it's not haunted.
Maybe you think Stalker is sort of factually accurate. Like, yeah, you know, all the big things.
You know,
the mutants.
I don't think I ever played Stalker.
Place? No, I think I played some of it, and then I don't know why... No, I'll tell you why I stopped, because I tried it on PC, and I've got a shit PC.
Ah, that'll do it.
And the problem with playing a horror game on a PC is if you don't have the graphics, it looks like sort of the prefab of the film before they put the lighting in, and like, do you know what I mean? Like, they're doing a dry run of it. And then this monster will jump out here, and... obviously, it's not scary now, but once you put in the lighting and things, right, then
it looks like a sack
good,
of yoghurt.
So, yeah, so you're just like... Oh no, I did that with years and years ago with Fear as well.
Oh man.
Again, I never have a PC that's particularly good that can play top-end things. That's just not, I'm not a PC sort of guy.
Right.
Really. So, but yeah, the worst case of that, obviously many years ago, it made it even worse, was Fear.
Ooh,
it's like, well, you can play it on minimum settings. And I'm like,
okay.
This is not frightening at all because there's no lighting.
Yeah.
At all.
Yes,
please take my custard a second.
Oh, we'll. We're nearly there.
Yeah, it's not frightening at all because there's no lighting.
Yeah.
At all.
It's just kind
flat.
Of flat. And there's a mannequin that runs around.
And then you see the sort of Sadako inspired, you know, rip-off character. And I'm like, I'm not frightened because also they couldn't, like, graphically afford any of the effects either. So there was no kind of, you know, they'd had a bit of motion blur maybe and things go, like a bit woozy and...
Yeah.
None of that, didn't it? So she just kind of comes around the corner like she's on a cardboard cutout on a wheel thing.
Just very matter-of-factly.
Oh, no! I had to stop playing this. It's completely pointless. So that's why I stopped playing Stalkers on the PC.
That's fair. Did you ever try GTFO?
No.
That one's really good fun. Again, one of the ones that will suffer from poor graphical settings.
Yes.
But it's absolutely nails. But you and up to 3 friends, but the difficulty is the same no matter how many people you have. So if you go in solo, you'll die immediately. But you're all prisoners. And so because you're in prison, they're like, here are some guns. We're sending you down to this... basically, they drop you into... an underground bunker, and they're like, can you go retrieve these data files for us from this computer? Oh, and there are monsters everywhere. So you have to try and sneak around, because it's a lot of like Stranger Things Demogorgon looking motherfuckers who can't see but have like incredibly good hearing and are mostly asleep. So basically you send one person in with a sledgehammer to be like, shh, and then cave their head in and then kind of try and clear the room before all hell breaks loose.
I feel like that would make a noise. Yeah.
Yeah,
donk.
Yeah.
Those indie games that are like, they're great, but they just, a lot of indie games, like that, especially in the horror genre, they soak up every sort of recent influence, don't they? Like, shoving towards it. It's like Stranger Things type creatures, and then the whole sound based thing is very much, you know, Amnesia and stuff like that.
Yeah, of course.
You know, things that have come before, which is fine, but it's funny how they like just go, let's take all this in. And
I think it dates them quite rapidly because obviously they've come of their time in a way that, say, Saw was as a franchise or whatever.
Well, I was talking about this recently about indie stuff, how like obviously it's very, very, very popular now.
Yeah.
And you're almost, good old capitalism means that you're almost forced into you know, you need to make your game stand out, right? So then you're forced into thinking about it in a very marketing-oriented way again because it's so flooded.
Yeah.
Whereas initially, you know, a long, long time ago, the idea was that, well, I just made this thing because I wanted to and no big budget place would ever let me, so this is a weird fucking whatever. But now a lot of it is back to, like, we need to make it stand out. This is our living because it's business. We want to not fuck up and have to go back to working at a major company like
they
hate it. So they have to be like, right, so it either has to be very visually unique, so when you're scrolling through Twitter you're stopping, oh, what the fuck's that?
Yeah.
Or it has to be, you know, you had the whole genre things that are designed for streaming moments, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So jump scare things or spooky things. Again, not that they're bad games, but just
it's
interesting to see how you, unfortunately, capitalism always creeps back in, doesn't it?
And
forces you down a fucking route.
It really does. Although I feel like there are some encouraging signs recently that projects that wouldn't get made X number of years ago now are. Like,
yes.
Have you checked out Venba?
I haven't, but I've heard about it.
It's like a gorgeous kind of pastel-coloured game about... It follows a woman, and she and her husband have moved from India to Canada.
Yes.
And it starts with her basically, minor spoilers, finding out she's pregnant.
Yeah.
And then the game fast forwards and it stops at intervals over the next 30 years. And it's all about family and sort of the tension of her son growing up in Canada and wanting to be more Canadian than Tamil.
Right.
Because he... you know, he's getting bullied at school because he doesn't want
to
smell like spices or whatever. And a lot of it is around cooking. So there are cooking mini-games. And in the middle, all these touching scenes. You can play it in an hour. I cried my eyes out. Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah, it just sounds fantastic. See, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff like that. We're blending genres, but they're blending it because it's important to what they're trying to make.
Yeah.
And... again, I'm not. It sounds like I'm an addict, but like they're not led to thinking, let's do this, let's add all these things together because this is what's popular now. It's great. We're adding the cooking element because obviously dishes and cuisine and passing on those family recipes is so important to
the
storyline.
Yes, that's the thing.
It makes sense.
Because, in the game, there's a recipe book, but a lot of it's obscured from water damage and stuff.
Yeah.
So you're playing as this woman who's trying to piece her mum's recipes back together, but then pass them on to her son, and it's incredible. I was talking to my friend about it, who's my neighbour actually. It's really weird. I'm friends with my neighbours. I've become one of those people. They're wonderful people. Like, I go around their house quite a lot. But,
oh my god.
One of my neighbours / friends, his parents are from Sri Lanka.
Right.
And it was weird, like a day after I played Venba, I went around to his house and he made his mum's aubergine curry recipe. And he was like, oh, I've not made this in years. And it was sensational. But like, it almost got me all teared up again. She was like, had to ask my mum for the recipe, and
you're like crying, eating his curry. It's like, oh damn, it is good.
Yeah, like, yeah, because you know, we then started talking about recipes and family culture and all that kind of stuff.
Hmm.
And I don't know about you, but that's not really something I have generationally.
No.
Not
really. It's very sort of vague, like northern dish things,
right,
that are all just very pastry heavy, or just like put everything in a bowl.
Yeah. I mean, which are delightful, but they don't, I don't think in the same way as other cultures, I don't think they become so like, this is our recipe for this.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I've got Italian roots, but I'm, what would I be, third generation?
Right.
Because my great-grandfather came over when Mussolini came to power, because fascism bad.
Oh, yes.
And then our family's been in London since.
Yeah.
But I think they tried quite hard to assimilate.
Okay.
So there's not really been any sort of passing on of recipes or anything like that. Like, my dad doesn't speak Italian. I don't speak Italian.
Yeah.
And it does make me wonder. It's like, oh, like, I wonder if there was like a legendary recipe for something in the family. We're going off this little...
Ooh.
This little beaten path.
Off we go from the main road.
So, quite literally, welcome to my neck of the woods.
Welcome to the jungle.
This is the wood in which I walk my dog every day.
Aww.
It's just quite nice, really.
Look at the beautiful dappled light coming through. Sunny again today.
It is, yeah. But it does feel like it's getting colder in the shade, which gives me hope, because I fucking hate summer. I'm an awesome winter person, so...
Fair. I used to be horrendous in the sun. And I gave up one day. I was like, oh, fuck this. I'm bored of, like, being so, like, warm and just lying on the floor. I just went and did... I went, fuck it, I went to mow the lawn, did that.
Right.
Sweated like shit, yeah, as it were. And thought, I actually feel all right now.
Yeah.
And then, so since then, my tactic has been, like, if it's hot, just do loads of stuff outside.
Yeah.
And for some reason, that's better. Or just, like, get in, like, hit it head on, and it seems to be, like, I'm way better in the sun. I'm talking, like, a total 180 on it. Like,
brilliant.
A few years back, I was, like, went to a Ealing Beer Festival.
Ooh.
And I literally couldn't participate because it was the heat I couldn't right. do. So I just sat in the shade going, I have to go home, I'm sorry, I'm really feel bad. And my friends are kind of like, well, yeah, what?
It's just hot.
It's just too hot, I can't. But, like, I don't know what changed. Maybe it's just getting older. I don't know. Because you get colder when you get older, don't you? So
you
maybe
do,
it's
yeah.
something like that as well. Maybe the heat's keeping me alive.
This, you know what, I because I get quite bad seasonal affective disorder. So when the clocks change into BST, I generally slip into a deep depression for weeks. But
it's
this
really bad.
This year's been all right. It's not. It's, I mean, last summer was ridiculous. But this summer it's not been that hot. But I think, like you, I've just gone... sod it, like
I've just got to get in. What am I going to do? Yeah.
Well, I just it basically what got me through it was I stopped wearing jeans all the time.
Yes.
And I bought a load of harem pants, and they're so breezy. And I was like, right, I'm going to wear these. I'm going to wear a cap to keep the sun out of my eyes, and I'm going to walk the dog every day because she deserves it.
Yeah.
Yada yada yada. And it yeah. helped. It yeah. sort of fixed my brain a bit.
Acclimatizing and what have you. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, cool. It's. Or maybe I'm just getting old and
yeah.
the Reaper approaches. And
it sort of gives you a false sense of security. Look, you enjoy the heat now. Mm. Oh, yeah, thank you. So you hate the cold more when he arrives.
I'm looking forward to being one of those people that has to wear a jumper and a woolly hat in summer.
Yeah.
I love wearing jumpers. I love woolly hats.
God, I remember years ago when me and my wife went on honeymoon in Ooh. Barcelona.
Oh, lovely.
And it was winter, because we got married in December.
Nice.
And it was not very hot. It was like 14 degrees or something. So we were wandering about. First English types. We were like, this is quite nice. So shorts, you know, little T-shirt.
Yeah.
And we saw a woman native to Barcelona walking on the street with this massive, like, quite fancy, she's obviously quite rich, like a big fancy fur coat, looking absolutely frostbitten. Her face, she was like, fucking hell, this is free. Oh, she's horrible. Like, she hated even being outside. And we were just like, la, la, la. We're tourists.
There is that point, though, in autumn and also in spring, where people dress for the weather they want it to be, mm-hmm. and they can get away with it.
Yeah.
So, like, I love it in autumn when you still see people in shorts and T-shirts, but you've got people dressed like, you know, like women dressed like they were spying for the French in 1940.
Which is a fucking good look.
So good. It was all the rage when I went to uni.
Yeah.
And it's just iconic. Like, I'm sad that it's not still in vogue.
I do feel like you can sort of do what you... There's a more... Things have opened up a bit in terms of acceptance of just, like, do what you want.
Yeah.
So if you did want to just go for that, it'd look good because you'd just be like, ah, yeah, that makes sense. You want to look like that, and it worked.
Yes, 100%.
Which is nice.
Yeah. I do, like, I genuinely do get... This is... Oh, my God, it's going to make me sound old.
Down some dangerous...
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Branch-laden, horrible, sloping path. No, it's very nice. Like a slight incline.
We're approaching, there's a massive pond, which we can sort of sit on the banks of.
Sit on the banks of
and have
pond.
A nice little...
Sitting little on the banks of the pond.
Watching the swans eat some bread.
Watching the swans.
They should not be eating bread.
Fuck, what rhymes with swan that's food?
What
rhymes with swan that's food?
Well, swan, if you're brave enough.
Oh, yeah. That's true. They're eating the swan, though.
So back on, true. No.
Feeding swans.
Filet mignon.
Filet mignon. Which way do we go?
I've led us a slightly different route.
You approach a path, the fork in the path.
Sometimes.
You like that sort of thing, don't you?
I'm one of those nerds. Well, I was just about to say sometimes this reminds me of the woods around Amon Hen in the Fellowship of the Ring, so...
So there you go.
Right.
Amon Hen.
Let's see.
Is that in the film?
Yeah.
Amon Hen.
That's where Boromir dies.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, he died?
Oh, sorry, spoiler. Well, Sean Bean was Boromir, so...
Sean Bean dies in what?
I know.
Oh, I'm feeling not so well in this one.
Oh,
fucking hell.
Bastard.
Oh, you bastard.
Bastard.
I hesitated to swear about them. It was actually a dog, not a child.
Right, well.
Ridiculous, man.
Here's a nice bit.
This is so nice.
There are other nice bits.
If only
but...
there was video. I'm going to do. We'll show you some video. You will have seen it now. It's probably a selfie in front of this pond, so you've probably seen it on the album art.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to change to the big microphones.
Excellent.
See you on the other side.
This is a nice setting, though. Sat over this little...
It's pleasant.
Is it a river?
No.
It's a canal?
It's big pond.
Big pond?
Big pond.
But it's a pond... So, it's a pond, right?
Yeah.
So it is circular, but it doesn't look it because of the big sort of bit in the middle.
Well,
is there a name for that? Do you know you get like a big bushy island that you couldn't actually stand on, but it's sort of...
I don't know. I think it's just referred to as the island. People aren't allowed on it because it's where a lot of the waterfowl nest in nesting season.
Gives them their little space to do
you
their
get
thing.
And swans, like... cormorants. You get all sorts around here. They'll let anyone in these woods.
Bloody swans, cormorants.
And
it's quite good because you'd never be able to get on there because as we just saw, there was a family going past in a boat and the geese were like, I am going to fucking
Oh, absolutely
end you.
Do you win, yeah.
I think that was what the goose went, I think that was goose for, I'm going to fucking
I'm
going
to absolutely end you.
The actions would have matched it because it just came at the back of the boat. Like,
yeah.
That's pretty good.
There used to be a black swan that lived on this pond.
Really? Like the film?
Yeah. It died of bird flu last summer, which is a shame.
Spoilers.
But it was the... Oh, that bit when Natalie Portman gets flu and dies. But it was the most aggressive thing you've ever seen.
Like, wow.
Because these ponds are pretty massive. If you've got the right sight line, you can see for ages.
Mm.
And you could just see this swan. You could see it looking at a goose that didn't know he was there, and he would just be motoring towards
it.
Just murder in his eyes.
That's cool.
It's the most aggressive thing I've ever seen.
It's kind of cool.
Yeah, it was great. I was sort of...
Toxic swans.
I was sad when he died, but it was... This is going to make me sound like a bad person, but it was also quite funny.
It's quite funny. The notion rather than the act itself.
Yeah.
Mm-mm-mm-mm.
I mean, like, don't
you weren't like sat riverside, pond side, I mean.
Just what?
Pissing yourself.
Watching it.
Just going, pointing.
Oh, no.
What's your lifespan, mate? Mine's slightly longer.
Yes. Give or take.
Hopefully.
We'll see. I'm
have to stop. See, so like, oh,
I'm hedging my bets.
Someone's looking at you like, yeah.
Yeah. Mm.
You've got a mortgage, mate.
Ugh, yeah.
I don't. I'm a swan. That's good. So yeah, so that naturally sort of, you know, links into your streaming that you've been doing.
Yeah, absolutely.
What's this pond?
Oh, like
what's a pond body of water.
Body of water. What's the stream?
Name another one.
Body of is good. Yeah.
Thanks.
I liked it.
It's a massive goose agrees.
It's just going nuts over there. Yeah, streaming. It's a funny one. I've been doing it sort of. God, over 2 years now.
Yeah.
Because I got like my start in games journalism all the way back in 2008, which is terrifyingly long time ago.
Mm.
But I was always working for like other channels and other websites and stuff. And then I decided in 2021, I was like, I'm going to see if I can cash in 13 odd years of goodwill and launch a Patreon.
Yes.
And thankfully enough people went for it that I wasn't immediately destitute.
Yeah.
Good.
So it gave you a good base, like going through.
Yeah. It sort of just gave me the confidence that I wasn't ruining my life walking away from a salaried job with things like sick pay and a pension and that sort of thing. Just ruining my life in other ways by saying reprehensible things on the internet all the time. I stream twice a week, which to me, like, because I stream for like between 3 and 4 hours.
Mm.
And that to me, like, when I'm done, I'm like, ooh, that felt like a day's work.
Mm.
But then my partner watches a lot of people who stream on Twitch, and some of those people are hardcore. They stream 6 days a week for like 10 hours.
Yeah.
And I just think, I mean, they're younger than me for one thing, but I'm like, you are going to have a coronary. Like, it's terrifying. Like,
yeah, it's a bit, yeah.
But I think the nice thing about the whole Patreon setup is that it's taken me a while to learn to stop beating myself up about, say, missing a deadline or not constantly pumping out new stuff.
Right.
But it's sort of the first time in my life I've been able to set my own work pace and I'm not working myself to death. And it turns out like that's actually quite a positive thing. I think going back to fucking capitalism, but
yes, indeed,
it's. I think we're so ingrained to think of our worth being defined by our productivity, but like the simple fact is that like if I did try and stream 6 days a week, my home life would fall apart and I would be tired and miserable.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't.
Yes,
but the nice thing is that these people haven't walked away and gone, well, that's not enough.
Yeah, so yeah.
Basically, 8 hours of streaming a week, and they've had enough of me.
Yeah, no, that'll do. That's absolutely. Do you know what? That's plenty, mate.
Yeah, more than.
It is interesting because that they came along with you because they weren't you.
Yeah, you which know, is very nice.
Which it is was, nice, and that's not a. You can't put a number on that, you know.
No,
but you know that's what's nice about it is that you are. As much as is humanly possible, which isn't that much, separating oneself from the kind of that capitalist structure a bit, but not really because you still have to get money from doing it. But
yeah.
As in like you, what I'm trying to get at is creating things ideally should be as separated from the money part of it as you can be.
Yeah.
To, you know, in terms of your decisions. And it's not always possible and that's, you know, that's a very idealistic state to be in. But if you can do that, you should then, I think, try and make all your decisions based on making something that you really care about or that says something about you or is something that you love or, you know, that is you expressing that in one way or another and try and keep it as far away from. It's hard because you think, well, I want more people to watch and want more people to sign up, but also you want to try your absolute best to not do something solely to get more people to sign up, even though that sounds like a silly thing to say because you think, well, you want to make more money,
but
right?
That's the thing, is that growth is good, but like, you know, I think you're right in that enthusiasm is infectious, and also if you're not feeling something, people can tell, and it's dispiriting for them as well as for the creator. But
yeah,
one thing I've discovered is like, because obviously Patreon, because the more money you make, the more money they make because they take a cut. They're constantly giving you your metrics and being like, over the last 30 days, this many people have cancelled, this many people have signed up, this many people have downgraded, this many people have upgraded.
Right.
And at first, it used to terrify me. I used to stare at those graphs and be like, oh God, oh God, oh God. While at the same time I was, to be candid, making more money than I did in my previous salaried job because games journalism does not pay well.
No.
But what I've realised is that basically it's hit, it's plateaued so that people come and people go, but I'm generally around the same ballpark of people who are subbed and people, you know, who are willing to give me money and the amount of money coming in. And you know what? While it's holding, I think it's nice. I don't feel pressure to grow it. Because I work for so long in games journalism, I'm not used to having any money, so I'm not really money driven. Like, there's a roof over my head, I can put food on the table, and that's wonderful. Everything else feels like a bonus. So it feels like in this year specifically, a lot of the pressure's come off, and it's nice.
I think I also do really like that model in general, because it's you don't feel like you're pressuring anyone to give you anything.
Yeah.
And it's nice that they go, well, I feel like doing it. And people are doing it out of this is spare money.
Yeah.
Spare money. You know what I mean? I can
this is something I've committed to.
But in the same way you buy a pastry or whatever, you know, think, well, I can do that. Cause it brings me a bit of joy.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's the same thing. So it's like the nicest transaction you can have to do with money, really, because everyone feels good about it.
Yeah.
I think usually, quite often, if I give money to a stream or whatever, I feel nice about it because I think, well, that's nice. I've done a nice thing. I'm nice.
Yeah, it's
always... I don't have to do that and I still get the stuff.
Yeah, you know? It's really gratifying.
I stumbled across an Amiga streamer in this thing at Norwich Amiga Group. This guy called Nag Graham, he calls himself, right?
Cool.
It's this little Norwich Amiga Group. And it's just, he's just like a nice lad in his room, right? He's just like, hello, and he talks like that. I'm called Graham. They have this little Norwich meetup, right? And they do once a month or something like that, and this little group, and he just streams around it. And he was just playing a game that I remember on the Amiga called Legend. Just called Legend.
Oh, simpler times.
And it was like, I remember absolutely loving it. So I saw it, so it came up on my little, you know, channels you might like. I saw the little thumbnail, that's fucking Legend.
Mm, right.
He's playing Legend. So I went in and had a look at it, right? The game itself was like, completely nicked everything from Dungeons & Dragons and like Hero Quest. And
right.
Like, and it had that sort of isometric tile thing, but it was real time.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than turn-based, right? And you ran around. But it was a little... And because I was that age, literally I'd never heard of all these archetypes of anything, right?
Yeah.
So I didn't even know. I thought they'd invented them. I was like, these guys are fucking geniuses. You know, I must have been like 7 or 6.
Sure.
I thought, these guys are geniuses. Like, what are these, like orcs and wizards and what is this? And they've got like, and like they had shops above ground before you went into the dungeon, right? Almost like Diablo-esque, right? When you went in, it was a bit like that.
Right.
Obviously, you know.
Sure.
And there's a bard who would like boost you if he's in range playing his
lovely
loop and shit. And I was like, that's a wow, so his music, well, okay, you know, all this stuff. And there's like a shop above ground that was there's an apothecary, that was it.
Mm.
Again, never seen that word, and I was like, well, what's a cool
what
word,
is that
apothecary? And you bought the ingredients, and then you could, there's a little UI where you could mix them with the
pestle and crafting system
shit. Yeah,
I mean, this does sound like
it's actually kind of
really
sick,
ahead
right?
of its time. Yeah,
but like just the fact that I'd never seen any of the sort of fantasy archetypes as well,
yeah,
I was fascinated. I was like, oh my god, look at all this stuff.
Yeah, it would be, yeah.
The loading screen had this barbarian with like insane biceps and a big axe, and there's a snake going round him and trying to fight him.
Oh, hell yeah.
Also like going through a skull, eye of a skull or something, and I was like... And these days I keep looking at it and going, well, that's my first tattoo, isn't it?
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, that's a full back piece. You've got to get it done, piece, yeah, yeah. Right.
But he was playing that anyway. I just went in and chatted to him, and then I kept coming in after that. And then after a while, I saw they had like a donations thing, because it's like, oh, it'll help us make posters for the meetup and shit like
hell
that.
Yeah,
so I just chucked him a fiver and he was so happy, and I was yeah. like, that was great, I feel good about that.
It's really nice, isn't it? It's just it's nice to
getting
be community minded
point.
Yeah, it's quite an empowering thing. I'm subscribed to quite a few different Patreons. I don't think I actually watch any of their stuff.
Right.
Which sounds awful, but like...
No, I know what you mean. I think that's quite common.
Yeah, because I'm like, well, I'm giving them money because I really support what they do, and I love what they do, and I want them to keep doing
it. Yeah.
And then they put out a new video. I'm like, oh, good for them.
Yeah.
It's very rare that I go, oh, I'm going to watch that, actually.
I know what you mean.
At my worst, I think what I'm doing is giving myself permission to slack off.
Yeah.
You know, it's like being like, all right, yeah, I didn't turn up to Double French, but I did my homework, didn't I? So,
yeah.
Or like, my mock grade was good, so fuck you.
That's true. Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? I think there's levels of it, like, in terms of that, it's been spoken about before, but you know, that this business model is a new thing now. You find a niche of dedicated people who want to follow your stuff.
Yeah.
And you just build that up and you keep that healthy, right?
Mm.
So yeah, the two sort of levels is people you support and usually people you know and think, well, I want to help them do what they're doing.
Yeah.
And you throw them a couple of quid on the monthly, and you might not necessarily get around to watching it straight away. And then you get the kind of the fan base stuff where there's like, I started watching Tim Heidecker's, you know, Tim and Eric.
Yeah.
So he has it's been going for a few years now, I think. He's got like it's like a Saturday Night Live style American show. He does it in the mornings, I think. He does it once a week. And it's just him, but he's just doing it from his house. But they have, the setup is the same kind of aesthetic, right?
Right.
And he just talks shit, and he gets guests on, and he talks about things that have been happening, and they have music in his garage, and then he has like two cronies at the back, two like, they're good, but you know, the two sycophantic cronies, that American format, right?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And that's obviously, he's got that fan base, so that's very much made up of people who are like, know him from whenever, you know, when he gets people on, he gets callers on and stuff, who zoom in and stuff,
right?
Coming on the Zoom, and they're all very much like, his fan base are very much, I love you, Tim. And
right.
You know, I came to see you in this show, this town. And, you know, they're very much. So you can see that kind of keep that tight fan base. And that's the Patreon. That's the.
Yeah. That's the core.
The system, you know.
Yeah, but it's interesting. Like, good. like I at the time of recording, I've been doing this 2 years on my own channel, more than, and I'm inching towards 25,000 YouTube subscribers.
Holy mackerel. I know,
which is...
Well, I added one earlier. So
oh, thank you very much. that's the smallest count of any channel I've worked on for over a decade, I think.
Yeah.
And I love it. It's nice because it's a small community, but they're hyper engaged, which is really, really nice. Because again, it takes off that pressure to be like, well, if I don't hit a million subscribers by X, then blah, blah, blah.
And again, it's much better. That's the best thing you want, the engaged people who care about it, rather than just growing that number. And then it might be full of people who actually don't really like it or just like not nice
people.
Just
bring a weird energy,
Or whatever, and you have to manage all that then. And you're like, how do I deal with it?
I've had some weird streams where I've streamed a game that's more current because generally speaking... You know, like, because I share a lot of audience with sites I've worked on before, so like Eurogamer and like a lot of the outside Xbox and extra people also dip into my streams and stuff. So if they're all streaming a game, like when Elden Ring came out, I was like, I'm not going to touch Elden Ring because everyone's streaming it.
Yeah.
They were like, oh, thank God. But when I've occasionally streamed a game that is new and is therefore coming up in search rankings, just get a wave of, not dickheads, but people who just aggressively don't get the vibe.
Yes.
But are trying to... basically assert the same culture that they're used to in chat from other streaming outlets.
Yeah.
And I cannot emphasize enough that that's not what you're going to find here.
Yeah.
You're going to like, I'll be honest with you. The main pillars of chat for my channel are, arguing about butts in different fantasy franchises. We once had like a 45-minute conversation about who has the best ass in Lord of the Rings or which group of people. It's the soldiers of Gondor because they're going upstairs all day long.
So it's based on who you think rather than... I was trying to think how many ass shots there are in that.
Oh, no. It's a Lord deep dive.
Mm,
the so Rise of Rohan, thighs of steel, but small buns because they're just on horses all the time. You know what I mean? Elves, two eggs fighting in a handkerchief.
Do you not need the control, though, if you're on the horse? Surely the gluteus maximus
I'm not
a major part of the core control.
True.
To keep central on the horse.
Don't get me wrong. Like, I wouldn't kick any of the Rohirrim out of bed for eating toasts and getting crumbs everywhere. But I'm just saying that if you want like a proper badonkadonk, you go to Minas Tirith and you work out where the guards are drinking. So we talk about that a lot. We talk about cannibalism a surprising amount.
Much crossover between those two subjects.
Well, I guess so. Yeah. Rump steak, etc., etc. And then just sort of just dithering, really. So you know, it's not... I'm not Joe Rogan, is what I'm trying to say.
No, thank fuck.
I don't think we'd be sat here if I was. To be honest with you.
He's a previous guest on the show. No. Imagine getting him on the fucking show.
Oh my god.
Again, Tim Heidecker's got... they've got so many samples of Joe.
Of course. They've
just got samples of him saying numbers, and it's so funny. Sometimes they just drop them in random orders while he's trying to... It's just him like going, 1, 5, 4. Like, and I'm just in stitches in the kitchen.
Well, yeah, because
that's
funny in and of itself, but just the repetition is so good. When it gathers its own momentum and just is funny because it's funny. That is you. The thing is, right?
Magic.
That kind of stuff. Yeah, it's magic. It's bottled lightning. But you can't force it.
No, you absolutely can't force it.
I remember one time I tried when I was still writing regularly for like Eurogamer and stuff. I was like, I'm going to try and write like Steve Hogarty or John Blythe. And I wrote a paragraph and was like, oh, I'm going to walk into the sea.
Yeah.
This is like, this is the worst, shit I've ever written. and like, it was insulting. It was insultingly bad. And I was like, there are certain things you just don't try and emulate. You just have to be yourself.
Definitely.
Even if that self is weird and vaguely embarrassing. Especially if it's weird and vaguely embarrassing.
Yeah. That writing thing is interesting. I don't know about you, but it took me quite a long time to even get into that process of what I think the best process is, where you just keep going, just write the thing, write a lot of it, and then look back at it and go, no, get rid of that, change that. Because it's like, It's like, it's okay, no one's going to see this. I know it's on this page, but no one's looking at
it. But it's terrifying because they might.
Yeah. What fucking dickhead wrote this stupid shit? You know, and you're there going, ugh. But like, eventually you get rid of that because you know it's just part of the thing. And you go, that's not really what I'm saying, and I'm going to change it in a minute. I'm just going to splurge it out.
Yeah, you do the vomit draft, and then you actually write the thing.
Doesn't mean it's a true reflection of my soul.
No, but then it's very hard to silence that bit of your brain that is like, that is thinking about the finished product.
Mm.
It's the same reason, you know, like you're making a sandwich. Maybe you're feeling fancy. You cut up some pickles and you start stirring them with mayo. You don't spit in it. You know, like, you know the sandwich is going to be nice, but you don't gob in it. You know,
I was imagining you make the sandwich just based off a few ideas, look at it and go, oh my god, what dickhead made this. Like, I must throw it in the bin before anyone sees it. You just don't do it with anything else, do you?
You make a sandwich, like, sobbing. And then you whip off the top piece of bread and apply a different condiment.
Don't come in there. Like, starts walking into the, you know what you're making, don't look at it.
Look at it, is that tuna mayo?
No. So what? Many. This is a few years ago now, but I had Emily Guerra on the show,
who's
writing Baldur's Gate 3.
Yeah, how about that?
I know. And she said she's the best.
Yeah.
We were talking about anxiety in general, because that's what's came up, because that's when you talk to Emily, you talk about anxiety.
Oh, yeah.
She was saying how she goes, because she's an amazing writer. One of my favourite writers ever. She's the best. And she was talking about how she much prefers to write things than say them out loud, because she can have a few goes at it. So she doesn't mind that draft period.
Right.
Because she knows no one's going to see it.
Yeah.
And she goes and she refines it and refines it. And then what comes out after that is she can ensure it's exactly how she wanted it to come out, right? Whereas if she's talking, she's afraid of saying something stupid weird or wrong or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
So she said, I'd rather write things at people than speak at them.
That's,
and I'm like, I see what you mean. That's interesting.
Yeah, it's relatable. It's just, I think it's a skill. And it is a skill. You can practice it. You can hone it to have the confidence in that process, I think.
Yeah.
It's not a confidence I really have at the minute.
But writing on Baldur's Gate 3 in general and that game, I've not got round to it yet.
Me neither.
I've got an illness. It's called Street Fighter.
Yeah,
and it's eating into everything else. But I've not even finished Tears of the Kingdom yet. It's still sort of ticking along in the background.
Yeah, I'm not going to go back to that. I think I've petered out on it.
And I do want to. I just have to pick it up. It's right there.
Yeah,
you can just pick it up. It's in. It's ready to go. Press the button and off we go. But Baldur's Gate 3 looks like something quite special because of just the culmination of everything and that studio getting to this point to make this game. And the amount of people involved coming in from loads of different places.
It seems, it does seem absolutely colossal. Yeah.
Whilst at the same time, the game doesn't feel... It's kind of a niche area, right? I still think... I know it's obviously quite a lot bigger things like D&D, right?
Yeah.
And that sort of game. And obviously, it's always had its audience, right?
Yeah.
But a game of that scope and scale and budget and the massive like performance capture and
huge,
all the money on that's something you usually only see with your Uncharted, your Last of Us.
Yes. And this is a game where, you know, a D20 pops up and it tells you what, you know, you've got to wait for the animation to finish to determine whether or not you've done the thing.
Ah, see, I didn't know that. So it literally comes up. So it doesn't hide, obviously doesn't hide its roots, as it
No,
were.
No, it's out there loud and proud. And I think for the game to have a scope like that and to be having such a huge moment at the time of recording is massive.
Yeah.
It's absolutely wild. So one of my, here I am doing a showbiz story. one of my friends is Karlak, who's one of the main companions.
Okay.
And they were telling me, they sort of told me a bit about the process of recording it, and it was just endless, so much, like, mocap and voice acting and all this kind of stuff. It seemed, like, super, super involved, and I do think it's genuinely impressive that they've got to that stage, and they're like, here is this game, and we've absolutely gone for it. And also, I mean, right now, I get the feeling that it's not a price that's been paid in blood.
Right.
At the minute, I mentioned earlier, but I've just started replaying Red Dead Redemption 2.
Yeah.
And that is a game that is so, so detailed. But you know what? When I play it, I feel like there's blood on my hands. Cause I'm like, some people got absolutely run into the ground to make this thing happen.
Yeah.
And it at some point, like, I mean, like, when it's cold, if you've got a male horse, its testicles go closer to its body. If it's hot, they go lower to the ground. A, no one needs that. And B, well, the horse needs it, obviously, for fertility reasons, but no one needs that in a video game. But also, like, that is not in there because it was a labor of love. I think it's in there because the studio was like, we're going to make the scope of this absolutely bananas, and we don't, you know, we don't care who sleeps under their desk in order for it to happen.
Yeah.
It's Aubrey and the I will grind whatever grist the mill requires business. And it make me sad. Because you can have a girl horse, so they don't even have bollocks.
Oh.
Yeah.
A gorse.
A go-
Wait. Gorse. That's what they call the...
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Horses and gorses.
Gorses and it's all horses for gorses. Yeah. But... yeah, it's that thing. Also, I just imagine with the testicle thing, you're not got someone who's like, you know, some junior animator storming, like getting in the lift, going up to floor 100, storming into the meeting going on there and going, no, you listen to me. I want these horses' bollocks to grow and then shrink, and I'm the man to do it.
Exactly. It's, you know, I think what will happen there is, basically, can we make the horse's bollocks adjustable is the kind of thing you only say after doing a massive rail of cocaine. Like an absolutely enormous, like all the way around the toilet seat line of gack.
Maybe they accidentally did the gack in the shape of some bollocks and went, oh, interesting.
Yeah.
You know, you're absolutely right. But it's that game in general is a strange one, as you say. I think that's interesting as well. So as far as I understand it, Baldur's Gate 3 is very, very big.
Yes.
And people are like, I've done 40 hours and I've only left the first village and I've only like slapped one Gretchen with a glove. And that's the only combat, you know, that's all the stories that I've heard. It's like there's an insane amount to do, but but it's kind of it's interesting the difference between a game like that. Look at me talking about games and interesting. Ooh, interesting games, aren't they? I always say that I'll try and be embarrassed about talking about them too much. Oh, it's games leaning this podcast, but there we go, we're into it now.
Yeah, we're doing it.
Like having so much to do in a game like that versus, I think that's the difference. Having so much you can do versus having so much of a story left to that you have to fucking play through.
Yeah.
Right. And that's weird because that's why I think that's why I have such a weird relationship with Red Dead 2 as well, because there's parts of it that I've absolutely adore that I've never seen in games before. The way they tell the story through the camp evolving and changing.
Delightful.
And the way that people will have conversations whether you stood there or not.
Yeah.
I really like him. Tangent time. Can't stop me. I'm everywhere now. I love it when games do that, because I like this idea of, like, I've never been to them, but you know, like the punch drunk theatre stuff, or the kind of roaming theatre stuff where stories are happening in various rooms and whether you're there or not, and
you've got to find the thread and you've got to follow
and
it,
you might go in like mid conversation and this and that. I really like it when that, it doesn't very often, but something like that turns up in games, and that in Red Dead 2 that was really impressed. There's a bit where you're celebrating taking out a rival gang. I can't remember what it is now, the detail, it's been a while, but they have a massive party.
That's right,
and you can stay up all night or you can go to bed in the middle of it, and there's people chatting over there, and they don't do the video game thing of standing still, and when you get within a certain whatever the equivalent of an aggro range is, right, they start going, they're saying it whether you're fucking there or not. You're like, if you go around the corner and look at them, they're talking. If you go like up a couple of floors in the house and look out the window, they're saying
they're
it
still doing
there.
It. Yeah, it's much more organic, isn't it?
I love that.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about like that, and I wish more games would do that. But I say I wish more games would do that. It's insanely hard, takes up an unreasonable amounts of time, effort, money, people's lives, you know.
Yeah.
So when I say I wish more games would do that, I mean use the interactive element to be the story rather than, as we were saying, going back to the cooking game we were just talking about,
Venba,
thank you, where that does the same thing, where you're telling the idea, you know, the fact that there's bits of the the recipe missing, it's just a way of like making you feel like you're trying to remember the recipes that your family have had, and you like, but you haven't really cooked them before, or not much, and you can't really remember. So it's a nice way to sort of represent that feeling of going, oh, I remember they used to put this in and that, but is it? do we mix this in? Is that blended in? Do we fucking...
Yeah.
And that's a really cool way of, like, taking advantage of what games do to give you... to evoke feelings in the story.
Yeah, well, it's being didactic versus mimetic. Mm. So it's showing someone something instead of telling them, which I think is lovely.
Mm.
One thing I think is really great, because, like, you know, Red Dead Redemption 2, massive open world.
Yeah.
And, like, I feel like open world games, they really suffer from bloat, especially, like...
Yeah.
Ubisoft games like Far Cry, it's just noise.
You rig dynamite 3 times in Red Dead 2. 3 missions, which involves you being forced to move slowly and then just put something down. What the fuck do you fucking need?
We've made the animation, we're going to use it. Use it again!
Please!
Yeah, but so often there'll be this side quest or someone will be like, please help me, a bandit has taken my house. Ghost of Tsushima. Every side quest feels like it's got meaning and also context, because, like, someone will be like, please help me. Some bandits took my wife and they've taken over this mill near place name. And it'll be like, my family used to get our meal ground there.
Right.
Like, you know, it's everywhere is tied into the main character, Jin. And you really feel like he cares, but also knows the place.
Mm.
So while those places are new to you, like, he's really tied into it, and it's such a simple conceit, but the consistency with which it's done makes me care about side quests so much more.
Yeah,
because, like, it's, you know, like, you get a game where it's like, hey feller, like, I've bet you can't bring me 5 raccoons. Like, I probably fucking can, mate, but is that a good use of my time or yours? You know, there's a lot of... I tell you what,
that's very funny.
The first time I was playing Red Dead Redemption 2, it wouldn't stop putting an NPC in my way, and I kept hearing him off in the distance, and I was like, well, I don't want to deal with that guy, because his line of dialogue was like me complaining about someone who sold him a map, and he refers to that guy as a Chinaman, which obviously now is yes. you know yes. not an acceptable yes. term, and it wouldn't stop putting that guy in front of me, being like, like, it kept thinking like I'd not spotted him or not heard it, and so it just wouldn't accept my decision not to interact with this guy.
That's really funny.
It was literally
it was just like
sorry, you dropped this. Yeah. And he's like, you're a Chinaman. Like, yeah. No, I didn't drop. I ignored it. So in the end, I went and blew his head off. I went over there. I pulled out a shotgun. I blew his head off, and I went, I don't care. You're dead in the game now.
How fucking good is that though?
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah.
You'd just be like, nah, mate. We have another dog.
Hello.
Hello.
It's a little border terrier.
Hello there.
You're an old thing, aren't you?
Hello.
You're old fella.
Okay. Hello, hello. That's another... We get a lot of dog visits on the podcast in the parks.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. That happens really often. It's nice.
I debated like bringing my dog out for this, and then I was like, you know what? I'll just be constantly being like, don't
do that.
Don't do that.
Don't come back. Don't eat the swan.
Yeah.
Again.
Thanks. Well, the problem is this particular spot. I bring her here every day. Yeah. She paddles in that water there.
Yeah.
For those of you listening at home, I'm pointing directly ahead into a body of water that looks relatively clean. She paddles in that. But then in there, well, you see, like, it's all snarled up in roots and stuff from some nearby young trees. It's stagnant black water that smells awful.
Oh, God.
And she really likes going in there because it clings to her better, so it cools her off better.
Oh,
right. So she comes out with a massive tide mark, and she's just like, isn't this brilliant? Pet me! And I'm like, no! Yeah, having the confidence to have bits of your game go unseen, I think, is quite a remarkable thing, because obviously you want people to see your work, you know? I remember talking to Arkane back when I was still interviewing developers, talking to them about The Clockwork Mansion and in Dishonored 2.
Yes.
And they were like, yeah, it's possible to play it through and miss 70% of the level. I was like, how does that feel? Because, like, I've played the level now in preview and it's incredibly intricate and really well designed and, like, deserves to be seen. It's like, well, yeah, but, like, it's only rewarding if you have to go find it. Mm. It's like, that's lovely. That's really,
that
really nice.
I love that philosophy as well.
I also, it's the clunkier end of the scale, let's be honest, but I really like how in Fallout, if you dome somebody who's important, what it does is you stand over their corpse, there's just a series of pop-ups go, well, you failed that quest. You can't do that quest anymore either. You've completely fucked this quest. And it's just like, It's I really love it because it's a game being like you should. Do you want to reload your save? And it's like, nah, I'm good.
Yeah,
like, I just think it's funny. Like,
yeah, it's nice. That's quite. It's not a bad solution as well to go. You can do this.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, but
just be aware that.
Yeah, exactly. You know, because like know. I think that again harks back to like the tabletop RPG roots of a lot of these games is that. Obviously, with a tabletop role-playing game, like you don't have to code anything.
Mm.
So someone can be like, is there a window? You'd be like, yeah, all right, yeah, there's a window. And it also means that people can make these monumental decisions, and you can behind the scenes, be like, well, shit, that person was kind of important, but I guess I'll just pick up all of the bits that made them important and put them into a different character.
Right.
Or you can go, all right, well, you've absolutely fucked that. Like, there was a time I was running a campaign for a bunch of people. This was during lockdown. It was set in Deadlands, which is like a weird west, it's like cowboys and monsters kind of game.
Okay.
And the entirety, well, not the entirety of the story, but a good chunk of, let's call the first act of this campaign. So we are talking multiple sessions and like tens of hours.
Mm.
I'd planned basically 6 months worth of weekly sessions.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And a lot of it was predicated on them being undercover and maintaining that status as being undercover.
Right.
And they blew it immediately because they were running with some bad people, and they had to go blow up some train tracks. And they were going to do it. They were going to blow a bridge when this train, like when there was no train scheduled to be coming through.
Mm.
And they set all the charges, and then I was like, "This is really weird. There's a train coming." And the guy was like, "Light the fuse," like hoping that they could blow the bridge and the train would have time to stop. They were like, this guy wants to blow up a train. So they murdered him. And then they came back and they were like, yep, we blew the bridge. That guy died in the blast, though. And no one believed them. So then I was like, okay, well, they search you and like they found your ID and your cover's blown. And then basically they tried to kill them and they got run out of town. And it was very exciting. And then one of them just went, Johnny, did we just blow the whole campaign? I was like, yeah. Yeah, you did. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, so all of that's... Yeah, no, we can't do any of that stuff.
Oh.
So now the campaign is you're on the run.
Oh,
until
I
work out something else.
Yeah.
And it was... You know what? It was really liberating. Because I think it was a real moment for them to be like, oh, my God. Like,
yeah.
Our actions really had a consequence there. But also, it was really rewarding to be like, yeah, but don't worry about it.
Mm.
Like... It's like if someone knocks over the last sixth of your pint, you're like, don't worry about it. There's a bar over there.
Yeah.
I'll get another one.
Yeah.
You know, suddenly. Except for, in this instance, a pint was hours and hours of preparation.
It was a full table of...
It was just, it was a whole Google Doc of lore. And it was... No, I loved it. It was really genuinely good fun.
Yeah.
Because you could see they felt so guilty. But I was like, what? All those decisions were character based, and I love it. You role play the shit out of that.
And also going forward from there, it makes things way more exciting because those future decisions that set up how important each decision is and what it can do. Right?
It was lovely, and eventually the campaign became they were on the run, and there was one guy in particular who was coming after them, and then they went, we're tired of running, so they were like, we're going to turn around and have our moment. It was like, brilliant. And then, as these things tend to do, it fizzled out. Literally the session before the big confrontation, we stopped playing just because people got busy. That was like 2 years ago. We keep talking about meeting up for one last hurrah.
Oh, man, yeah,
and doing
yeah.
it. But
it's hard, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Yeah, I think with in terms of like games with those kind of decisions, it the more and more things you play and the more immersed you get in that, you know, especially over decades now for people like us, it becomes harder to make that meaningful as well.
Yeah.
Because obviously, it depends who you are, but I certainly try to suspend disbelief when I'm playing something and allow myself to get into it and not think, oh, this is one of those things or this will happen now. That just means that this stat is lowered. You know, you're trying not to be too fucking... about it, you know, just let yourself get into it. Not always possible, right?
No.
But things like that, those big consequences, things like, remember playing like Witcher 2?
Mm.
And there's a moment where you go, I mean, a little bit of a spoiler if you haven't played it, but...
You've had time.
You really have. there's a bit where I can't even fucking remember the details of it, but you are in the middle of a skirmish that you are not particularly allied to in any way, and someone goes like, listen, are you coming with us or are you going with them, basically, right, in the middle of something, but you have like it's a timer decision, you
right
know, a clock, and the clock is like 5 seconds.
Bloody hell.
It's not a you know sometimes you get games like this sort of thing with the RPG and they just stand there going
yeah,
and it's like 30 seconds
yeah, just idle
animation. The character model has to sort of awkwardly
yeah
sway left and right slightly, looking at you while you say
yeah
yes I will kill you or no,
or
I won't
or what
whatever
are my options again.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's
yeah
talk about something else.
Could you
where is Novak?
Yeah. And some for some reason always apply to you, right?
Yeah.
This was one of the first things I'd seen like that where it was like, oh no, I've only got 5 seconds to choose. And I go, oh, yeah, come here. You know, I can't remember what I did, but I said, yeah, this one. And then that doesn't bed in until another 15, 20 hours later. And they say, well, you know, you did that, didn't you? So fuck you. You know, so, whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It is, you know?
I love that kind
of
stuff.
And I was like, that's great. Okay, yeah, that's great. You know, it's things like that that just really make that kind of...
Just colossal payoff.
Mm.
Like, arguably, especially if it goes the way you want.
Yeah.
Like, or doesn't go the way you want, rather. Like, if you're yeah like, oh my fucking God, that tiny yeah decision I made has brought up this entire situation that I hate.
Yeah.
Delicious.
Yeah.
Lovely. Hateful, but wonderful.
Hateful, but wonderful. Makes you think of the freelancer mode in Hitman, which I got obsessed with for a while when it came out.
Mm.
Which, if you're aware of that, the freelancer mode.
Yeah, I'm just so chronically bad at Hitman that I haven't played much of it.
Well, it's quite nice because it's that mode is kind of, yeah, it's really hard, but it sort of doesn't matter because that's part of it. That's still an enjoyable part of it in this
yeah
mode. So it's just, you know, right, yeah, random target, random locations for you to choose from.
Yeah.
You choose three. And then random challenges within the level and stuff like
right
that. And it all just, and it makes it this gorgeous, proper sandbox. Like the thing it's always wanted
yeah
to aspire to be.
Yeah,
right?
It's, I mean, it's absolutely delightful. I've had some good time like
yeah
titting about in that game.
And just the escalation of making a mistake and things like that. And
oh, no game snowballs like Hitman. Oh my God, it's just wonderful.
I love that you can do things perfectly and fear and be on a cloud
mm-hmm
and do things catastrophically and be just as delighted.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
There's very few things that get that feeling out of you, you know?
Yeah.
Something goes really fucking wrong, it's hilarious.
Yeah, especially the failing forward thing.
Yeah.
Where like you're like, oh my God, I've just been seen stuffing that person into a bin. So I guess...
The most psychotic situation.
Yeah, always.
Remember, we used to have the elusive. We probably still do have it, but I haven't played it for a while.
The elusive
targets
yeah
where you get one go at it. And I had to, like, I was trying to eliminate a bodyguard to make it easier to get to my target. And I thought,
right,
definitely no one here. It's on one of the villa levels. And I pushed him over the edge, right? Of a little. He was having a smoke or whatever. Or he was just looking, like, right now. And then I look, as I'm doing it, I turn move the camera on to right, and a maid has just come out of like a door and looking at me as I'm just like fucking hoiking this lad. I'm like, oh,
come on.
And then I'm running after, just, it's just psychotic. I'm running after a woman, an innocent woman, through corridors in this nice house, just like throwing a knife in the back of her head. I'm like, this is wrong.
Especially when it chains and you're like, oh, I just killed 35 people because one person saw me.
And you don't quite, I didn't quite make it in time. Yeah. So she, you know, what? These people in this dining area saw a woman burst through the door and a knife, you know. And they're like, what the f-? And then you're like, well, that's it, it's fucked now, isn't it? Job's fucked.
I remember one time, you know, the fashion one,
yeah,
where like
Paris,
you choke out fucking Billy Corgan from the Smashing yeah Pumpkins. It's even dressed like he was in
Machina era.
Yeah,
right?
yeah. Oh, I see you know your pumpkins.
Oh, yes, I do, sir.
But I choked him out and I was stuffing him in somewhere. And then someone saw me and I was like, oh God. So I was dressed as him and I was running around. But like, it was just this comedy of errors that went on for about 25 minutes. And up the garden path, I'd managed to stash him in a shed. And then I finally had shit under control where I was hidden again and there was no new chaos unfolding. And then suddenly in his pants comes Billy Corgan because he's woken up. And he's panicking because like, I'm used to like, in Dishonored, you can play for... you know, 70 hours in a level if you really fucking want to. But if you choke someone out, they are out.
Mm.
But here comes bloody Billy Corgan just running around being like, oh, half an hour ago someone put me under and I'm still there being like, ah, fuck. So I'm trying to masquerade as him, but I'm just chronically shit at being a hitman. It's I love it.
Just putting Billy Corgan in a little box, stuffing him in his pants in a box in a garden shed. What a time.
Folding him in like a spider. He's leggy, but he's a very big man. Very tall.
Big hands.
Yeah.
Very big hands.
Mm.
Massive.
They used to be my favourite band in the world, and then he went all weird anti-vax about swine flu. Was it swine flu or was it bird flu?
I think he just lost his mind. He's always been a bit of a weird wanker.
I mean, he's one of those control freak megalomaniacs.
Especially as a teenager.
Yes.
Completely in love with them. Completely. Yeah. I'm still looking back at that stuff, man. What happens is my wife and I, we get some whiskey in. When the children decide to go to fucking bed on time. It's only it's the small one now. The old one is perfectly well behaved and delightful. When the little one decides to go to fucking bed on time, and then it's a Friday and we get a little bit of bourbon on and we go on, sometimes we go on the YouTubes.
Ooh.
After a couple more and someone mentions a song, we go, oh yeah.
Oh.
Oh, do you remember Nu Metal, my dear? And then off we go.
I love those nights. I have them with my spouse, and it is often it will start with a Mountain Goats video, and then suddenly it's 5 a.m. and we're watching Adam Buxton do How Is It Possible the Rat Control the Cook for the fifth time or whatever.
Yeah.
Or if we're feeling fancy, we go through our vinyl collection and we play different records to one another.
We get much trashier than that. We know we've had too much of the bottle. When what happens is I'm sat there in the front room and we've got Mudvayne on. And I'm like, wait a minute, we've got Mudvayne on. Let me just go to the kitchen and see what's left. Oh, yeah, not much left at all. Yeah, that tallies really well. There's about a third left. Okay, that's, yeah. That makes sense now. That's why we're there going, it got Dig on. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm sat going, meh, 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 like that in the corner. Like, you go to bed, dear. It's 2 a.m.
Yeah, let's.
And you're in the corner of the sofa going.
I don't know how many tangents deep we are right now, and I'm going to take us one more level.
Oh
down.
No, do it. Like seriously,
like Dante.
People would be disappointed if we didn't tangent. Fuck. So go.
In order that I don't sort of die before, like I'm good and ready. I've started going to the gym recently.
Oh yes.
Which is actually, I'm having quite a nice time. But my rule is, I don't run. Because I fucking hate doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But what I've been doing is I'll go on a treadmill, I'll put it on a fast walk, and I'll put it on a bastard incline that I hate.
Mm-hmm.
And then this morning, in fact, this is a humble brag. I was on the treadmill, and I was listening to Thunderstruck by AC/DC. And I realized that it is perfectly in time with like the fast walk pace I like, that I feel like I can do forever, but it's still a hard workout. Yeah. So then I Googled, what's that BPM?
Yeah.
And then I Googled songs with that BPM. And it's a lot of AC/DC. You get a bit of Led Zeppelin in there. But I tell you what else you fucking get. You get a shit ton of Venger Boys. Boom, 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 boom. And We Like to Party. Wait, is that, no, they're not the same song. Both 136 BPM. Muse plug-in, baby. And then you can just... And I'm just there like... sweating away. It's tremendous.
Fuck. That's really good.
I love it. The only problem about that gym is the treadmills are all hyper visible because they're up on the top floor with big glass windows. Some of my friends live nearby. And so every now and then I'll see them out the window and I'll wave to them and it's a fun joke. The other day they caught me treadmill dancing to Carly Rae Jepsen. And I was like, oh. And they saw me and they were like, oh. And I was like, well, I've got to do it more now. So I started really voguing. And let me tell you, maybe it's just because I haven't vogued enough in my life, but I am not dexterous enough to vogue and walk at that pace on a treadmill. I nearly fell off and skinned my face.
Imagine you. Which fucking
could, the only thing better, you know, it's just like it was Call Me Maybe as well. It was a, you know, like a real,
it's good.
And
good
yeah, pace. just nearly fucking stacked it.
Fucking hell! You know, you're just saying about going to the gym so you don't die too young.
Yep.
And then you die voguing to Carly Rae Jepsen.
You know what? I'm good with that. I'm all right with that.
I was going to talk to you about your painting streams.
Oh, yeah.
And Warhammer and that sort of thing.
Would you like to? You said you were going to.
I'm going to, and I'm doing it. I'm started.
Oh, God, we're already doing
it. Shit, we're doing it now.
Oh, my God, it's like a close-up magic trick.
That's something I did a lot as a teenager and dropped off for no particular reason, probably just because I didn't, when I went up to uni, I didn't know anyone who wanted to do it.
Yeah.
But I had a lot of orcs.
Oh,
bloody orcs.
They're
big
great.
Silver bastard ones as well, when the fucking.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Your warlords and war chiefs.
Nom, nom, nom.
I used to play it quite a bit, and I have really like fond memories of it because it'd be things like I had my bedroom was small bedroom, small, please cry for me, very small bedroom. But all I had was like this little long, very rectangular stretch of carpet that you could sit down on, and you were sat like you were squashed in like that, right?
Yeah,
and it was just meant to sleep in. That was it. That was the entire room, right?
Yeah,
that's what we had. And me and my friend would sit there with my back to the door, so my mum couldn't even come in to give us food.
Yeah,
and he had his back to the other wall, and then in the middle of us, it was like about a meter, if that, of space.
Right,
meter long and about 30 centimeters wide to put down the scenery and units and
shit.
And then do these little
little
battles, right? And then occasionally I go to my friend's house, and he had an older brother who had loads of Warhammer shit, and when he left the house we'd
sneak in
stuff
god,
put it on his kitchen floor, which is a big open, he had a big open plan kitchen, so we'd stick it all down there and like put all the very nicely made scenery that he'd painted properly and shit
that's
down.
That's the dream.
And sometimes you'd have like, that's like a special, I feel like my room was like a weekly wrestling show, right? That was Raw or whatever. That was,
yeah,
that was Dynamite. And then like we go to his house, that's all in.
A SummerSlam,
that's
amazing.
But we used to do that, and then once went to my friend's house, who was America, come over from America.
Oh, one of them.
And they bought a big sort of slightly more rural area place, quite a bit of money, and then they had this massive shed out back with a massive table.
Whoa.
With loads that was like proper. We never got it finished because we were like, we're used to our games lasting like 40 minutes.
Yeah,
this is like,
oh my, oh,
fucking
Warhammer's interminable. Bouncing. If you're playing like a full army game, like of Age of Sigmar or 40K, takes fucking forever.
Yeah, you need somewhere you can leave it and come back.
Exactly. Yeah. I actually never really did Warhammer growing up.
Yeah.
I think I had a box of models once, but never played it or anything like that.
Okay.
And I got into it in 2017 when two of my friends were like, "I might get back into Warhammer," and I was like, "Don't make me do this." I was like, "I don't want to fucking do this because like." I've got no artistic capabilities, so I'm going to paint these things. They're going to look shit, and I'm going to hate it. But if you do it, I know I'll crack. And they went for it, and I cracked. And then I sort of followed a painting tutorial. Something in my head just went click. And I was like, oh, I really like this. This is really zen and therapeutic. So then I started painting absolutely loads. And then I played my first few games with Age of Sigmar, and I went, this game is mid. This game is okay, because it takes fucking forever, and I at the time was playing an army that was just broken and shit against one of the top armies in the meta,
right?
But I was stuck because I was like, well, I'm playing Skaven against Sylvaneth in 2017. There'll be maybe one or two people listening to this who've just gone because if you had more than one clan of Skaven, you had to take a Chaos army rather than a Skaven army. It was a broken mess. Anyway,
right.
So basically, it was impossible for me to win. And I don't mind losing. I pride myself on being quite a good loser because I've done a lot of it over the course of my life. But the thing is, when you're playing for 5 or 6 hours and you know by hour 2.5 that you're going to lose, you don't want to go, well, should we just stop now? Because then you seem like a dickhead.
Yeah.
So you play the rest of it. And it just meant I would spend entire days just feeding rats to these magic trees. But the painting just
What a sentence.
I know. The painting really had me. And then I've pushed myself with it more recently and really tried to sort of get on top of it. And I love it. But I finally found my Warhammer game when they re-released Blood Bowl in 2020. And oh my God. So it's a small model count game. If you play quick enough, you can play it in 2 hours. Some of our games stretch to 6 because we're jawing and we're drinking pints.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I co-founded a league which has now grown to about a dozen people. And so we have a season that starts in February, and then playoffs start in November, and then we finish the playoffs, and then we have a Christmas tournament in December.
Oh,
and
man.
And then we do it all again the following year.
Oh, man.
And like we got stickers, like that's a patch on my jacket from the league.
Oh, is that HBL?
HBL, so it's called the Hot Bobs League. because you know that thing in WhatsApp where someone makes a tiny typo and everyone jumps on it like they're sharks and there's blood in the water. My friend tried to type Joy-Cons and it autocorrects to Hot Bobs. And the group was called Blood Bowl League, which wasn't exactly the most exciting name. Yeah. So suddenly it was Hot Bobs.
Hot Bobs.
So we're Bobs. Like we are Bobs, like and like playing Blood Bowl is like Bobbery, but the league is called Hot Bobs. But also Hot Bobs is a character because one of our players painted up a referee and called him Hot Bobs. It's
That's
really
beautiful.
Weird. Like fuck you, Marvel Cinematic Universe. You got shit on us. But
one quick jump in here.
Oh yeah,
we have a friend who typos once a day in our most common WhatsApp group, and every time he does, we change the icon and the name of the group to whatever he said, right? And it's like it's become, I mean, it's not bullying, but it's
but it's brilliant,
but it's always so good.
Yeah.
And one of the best ones he ever did was he's trying to type in Forza Horizon and it came out as Foreskin Horizontal.
Yes.
So for ages the group was called Foreskin Horizontal 4 or something like that.
I'll show you my one because I'm in another one. Hot Bobs was just a one-off, and that's now what it's called. But I'm in another one where we've got a friend who is very typo-prone. We've got a few actually.
Yeah,
you just saw what it's called. But like one time we've been playing Halo, and we love Oddball as a mode. Like it's our favourite. And one of our friends tried to type Top Balls, and it corrected to Top Balps. So it was called Top Balps for ages, and now we've gone through different. Multiplayer games, and no game retains its original name. So, like, when we played Destiny, it was called Upnums, because the numbers go up.
Upnums.
We played Hunt Showdown, and we called that Bum Claps, because, you know, the theme is like, clap.
Yeah.
Bum, 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 clap. So it's Bum Claps.
That's really good. Getting to there from
those.
You want
to clap a few bums tonight, and that kind of thing. but Halo is now Balps to us, to the point where I went on Cameo and I got Jeff, the announcer from Halo, to record himself going, Top Balps!
Oh, that's amazing.
But that group in particular gets renamed all the time based off different typos. And it's currently called that. Which was just, I think it was a pocket type, but I'm just going to try and read it out. It's myself, you, Lumujan Gonggabulbuff. And it's like,
That is absolute shark jumping levels.
You just like
fucking hell.
It is one of the highest forms of comedy. Just repeating someone's typo.
Yeah, it is though, isn't it? It's addictive. It's endless.
I love it.
That's why you have that patch.
Yeah, Hot Bobs League.
Hot Bobs League.
Blood Bowl, a small model count, but it's the stories that come out of it. Like the league has a zine, which is actually a website now. We've got a WordPress, and we write articles in World.
So good.
And like I made a whole bunch of trophies. We got trophies that get given out at the end of the season, and this is our third season now. So you know, there's a few plaques on all of them, and it's wonderful. I've made new friends off the back of it, and it's just like a really feel good thing. But with the painting streams. At the time of recording, I'm on a brief hiatus from them because when there's a video game, everyone's reacting to the same thing, and I can be surprised and be like, "Whoa, what was that? La 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 la." When it's just me and a brush and a tiny little man, I have to drive the conversation, but I'm also trying to concentrate really fucking hard on painting something. And so, oftentimes, I found myself by the last half hour of the stream, I was barely talking.
Right.
And when I was like, I should say something, I'd just go, "What am I doing?" And I just didn't feel like it made for good viewing.
Yeah.
It's
a hard skill, man.
Yeah, it just turns out I don't have it. I'm going to go back to them because actually I'm not painting very much now. I'm not streaming, which is annoying. Because what I did was I made something I love that's a hobby into a part of my job. But I do want to get back to it because it is just lovely. And also, like, I was shit at art at school. I wanted to do art GCSE, and then I was gently discouraged and told to do something more academic. which was a nice way of saying you're gonna fail. Yes. But this is the first thing I've done that is like a traditional art form that I've discovered that I'm actually okay with. It's just really nice to paint something and be like, I really like the way that looks.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
It's because I have like weapons grade anxiety and also like I very much have clinical depression. It's rare for, like, my self esteem is actually quite low, and it's if people try and compliment my work, I'm like, shut up, fuck off.
Yeah.
You know, I hate it, but
it's quickly as well like that. Yeah, like, blah, blah,
blah, blah. Like I'm allergic to praise basically, but when it's painting, I can paint something and be like, I genuinely think that is good. And it's a nice thing to A, spend a few hours zoning out and painting something, and then to finish it and be like, I'm really happy with that.
Yeah.
It's just, it's nice. Hmm. And especially when like the thing in question, like, you know, it's not a Caravaggio, it's not an oil painting of the stages of the cross. It's a halfling that plays fantasy football and he's got a ferret down his trousers. Like, the stakes are pretty low, but the potential for it to be hilarious is high. Like, one of my friends, he's an author called Struan Murray. He is a fiercely intelligent man, and an incredible painter. He has an orc team called Death of the Orcther, and every single one of the players is very a pun. Good. So he's got a troll in his team called J.R.R. Tolkien. There's Evelyn Waugh, but spelt like W-A-A-A-A-G-H. It's like every single one of them is just a treat.
Hmm.
And it's like, it's just very silly. Heavily organized nonsense is so delightful.